The researcher from, let's just do a quick introduction to one of the participants and honorable members of the committee. My name is Lomthula Ngaba from the research unit, assigned with the responsibilities in terms of assisting with the information for this committee on youth-related matters. Alright, so members, now you are familiar with the person. She will basically see to youth issues pertaining to this committee. She will also just brief members after our briefings by the two entities, and then she will just inform us about preparations regarding youth parliament that will be happening at the end of June. I will also inform members regarding the Children's Day event that's happening on the 11th of June, but that announcement will take place after our briefings. So as we go back to the agenda, we will be starting with the OSDB. Vinny, I do want to welcome you here to our committee. You will be speaking on the budget as well as the SAT plan of 2008-9. Documents have been circulated to all members, but those who do not have, they are copies right here in front for you. Then once the OSDP has completed their briefing, we then have the Umsobomvu Fund coming to brief us as well on their SAT plan as well for 2008-7. And then I said I will be making those two announcements on Children's Day and Youth Day. I will give immediately over to OSDP to start this day with their briefing. Over to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson, honorable members and colleagues. We've been requested to present the OSDP strategic plan as well as the budget for 2008 and 2009. Honorable members, I must say that the idea really is to give you a kind of a bird's eye view of the work that we'll be doing for this year, this financial year. Our budget is under vote, number one, the presidency. And we will be coming back in June to speak to you about the whole budget of the presidency in the full house. What we would like to do first is to give you a sense of how we structured our strat plan. First of all, what we have done is to want to take the strategic plan of the presidency and place the objectives of the OSDP within that plan, which means it's the alignment of the vision of the presidency, which is a better life for all through excellence in governing. After that realignment, in fact, that process came up after the meeting of the senior management services of the presidency, and we undertook that process to realign our strategic plan to that of the presidency. The second aspect is that we've taken a list of apex priorities and put together an approach which serves to align itself within the apex priorities as they stand. We literally actually took all the 24 apex priorities and broken them down into categories according to our programs, and therefore we made sure that they are aligned to the strat plan of the OSDP. So those are the two steps, measures that we have taken to ensure that our strat plan is fully aligned. But also, Honorable Chair, I must say that we are working against time. You know, because of the transition that is taking place, we literally have to finish our project by January next year, literally. So the work that we are doing on the ground must be done end of January, so that we are able to prepare a proper handover through February, March. So Honorable Chair, I think you will pardon us, because you will see that our work is very limited for this year, and our budget is a little meager. You know, it's not as usual as it was, right? I know that Honorable Andrew is going to fight with me, because what we've done this year, we've reduced our budget by $1 million. Because we must finish the work. It must be done by end of January. But if Honorable Chair, there's an issue that Honorable Members would like to raise, we are quite happy to go back to Treasury to reapply for more funds. But we will talk about it later. Right. As I go into the stress plan, Chair, you will see that our major work, really, for this year is around the implementation of the UN Convention. Honorable Chair, we've just come back from New York last week to launch the convention officially. And South Africa has now been selected as a pilot to implement this convention. So the United Nations made that decision, and the Secretary General has also indicated to us as a country that we need to start working hard towards implementing this convention, because we are now selected by the UN as a pilot project. So in 2 years' time, we will be reporting to the United Nations on the implementation of the convention. Our major work, really, Honorable Chair, is to popularize the convention. We've also set a figure there, you will see, next to that item. We are going to popularize the convention. We are going to compile a training manual and also a guideline, and also to, you know, begin building capacity of government officials to understand the convention. So that will be the major part of our work. Let me also refer you to the implementation of the program at local government level. We've allocated an amount of about, I think it's 400,000 a year. On that, Chairperson, we would like to... No, it's 450,000 a year. 450,000 rand. We would like to go to about... In fact, not literally go there, Chair, but to kind of begin a work with the municipalities to train them in understanding the convention, but also the mainstreaming capacity building program. We are targeting 255 municipalities in total. But what we will do, Chairperson, is to break it down into districts, go into districts and metros. So you would find that you would have a group of municipalities coming together in a specific district, 6 to 8 municipalities, and we will begin to train them in that field. We now have an agreement with the DPLG as well as NALGA to implement this program. We will be starting end of June. Let me also refer you, Chairperson, to the development of the National Disability Policy Framework. We've got an amount also allocated for that. We are almost at the end of the process. We are now visiting the clusters. We've done the social cluster, we've done the governance cluster, we've done the international relations cluster. We are now left with the economic cluster and the justice, crime prevention and security cluster. The reason we are visiting the clusters, Honorable Chair, is to inform the clusters about this framework, get an approval of the DGs, and proceed with the work that's supposed to be done. We're hoping to target the cabinet report out July for a final presentation, but also we are going to the Fossat Manco to present to Fossat Manco and also seek approval. What we have done in that regard, we've compiled a letter sent by the Director General in the Presidency to all Directors General to say to them that there's an agreement in terms of the input and also that the input should be bounced off with their focal point that they've appointed, and that they sign the mandate letter of commitment to say that they commit themselves to the process, and that they would be in a position to implement the policy framework. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, I must state clearly, just so that we avoid confusion, that the National Disability Policy Framework does not replace the INDS. It does not. All it does, it qualifies the INDS, but also serves as an implementation framework or guidelines of the CRPD, or the convention, that is. So what we are trying to do here is to qualify the INDS, because some of the events have really overtaken the existence of the INDS. For example, most of the recommendations that appear in Chapter 7 of the INDS have now been implemented by the department. So we are pushing towards a series where we are going to evaluate the performance of the departments at the end of the year. And that series of reports would then be tantamount to a scope of the framework. Chapter, let me take you also to the section on the 15-year review. The 15-year review really does not have a specific budget. It's paid by GTZ. It's the German Development Corporation. So GTZ is paying for the 15-year review. We started the process. We are almost at the end of that process. We are reviewing the performance of government from 1994 to date. And what we are trying to do is to inform the public around the shortcomings and achievements, challenges and opportunities, and specific findings of that report. Once the 15-year review is completed, Chairperson, it will go to the Cabinet Lahore in July. We hope to get the first qualification in July, and it will be signed off at the Cabinet Lahore in January 2009. We hope to be able to send the committee the report in the next few weeks, in the draft at this stage. Chairperson, what we've done, we've also budgeted for the, let me take you to the section on the coordination work, which is done by the Interdepartmental Coordinating Committee, as well as the Interprovincial Forum. We have budgeted separately for the two entities because we have to have these quarterly meetings, four meetings per year on each of the entities, and we've also set aside money for those particular meetings. Let me also go to the section on the National Disability Machinery. There is also a budget for that, as you can see in the figures there. The idea, Chairperson, is to strengthen the machinery. Because, as you know, in the previous presentation, I have spoken to the committee around the operations of the machinery. We've got traditional leaders, we've got religious faith-based organizations, we've got civic organizations. finance, we've got labor, we've got civil society, we've got TPOs, and we've got the commission, and we've got the accounting department and provincial offices. Currently, we have budgeted for 2 meetings, Chairperson, per year, but we would like to increase those meetings to a number of 4. We have considered the fact that sometimes when we call these meetings, we call them rather too late sometimes, and there's too many developments that are happening to an extent that when we call the meeting, we end up in a briefing session rather than a meeting. Chair, let me take you to the section on work with the JMC. What we have done there is to budget for the JMC meetings, well, our staff members, you know, in terms of transport, accommodation, and so forth. We have not budgeted for an activity specifically for the JMC. Because stemming from the workshop that we had together in January, we would have wanted to have a specific activity that we would have wanted to place in the in our work for the year, and we haven't done that. Well, simply because we didn't want duplication. We would have wanted to really have an activity which is specifically for the JMC with the OSDP. But maybe it's something that can be discussed after, you know, we finish here. Kenneth, let me take you to the section on the finance. There's a section that we put aside. It's the best activity for the year, really. We have never done this before. Here at Chairperson, we've got a partnership with South National Aid Council, specifically to look at the impact studies of HIV and AIDS on persons with disabilities, but also to look at the, you know, different reports that emerge, the work of the National Strategic Plan, the work of the SANAC Board, our work with the sector, and so forth. As I say, the activity is quite unusual. We've had to find money and to set aside for that particular activity, because it's going to involve research, it's going to involve visits to, for example, to ARV centers, distribution centers, clinics, and so forth. We will be working together with SANAC in that regard. Simply because, Chair, you see, the work of the SANAC is currently in the office of the Deputy President, and therefore we would like to be seen to be doing something really in that regard. Chair, also we've got an extra activity on the Art and Culture project. We would like to be doing an awareness raising advocacy program, and we will also bring the committee at the right time when that activity commences. It starts on the 3rd of November this year. Let me take you to the section on the IDDP chapter, and you'll see that the International Day of Disabled Persons actually takes the bigger chunk of the budget. We budget in that regard because it's a one-day event. And under normal circumstances, provinces would actually share the cost. But we would like to work in a manner that would not really interfere in the work of the province that we are visiting or that we are hosting the event with for the year. That takes the bulk of the money. For some reason, Chairperson, honourable members may want to raise the question as to how do we spend so much money for the day. But you know, we've been doing this for 10 years. I'm not saying that it cannot change. It can change by recommendation of honorable members in this committee. But for now, that's how we budgeted for the ITDP. Chair, let me conclude by saying that in terms of the budget itself of the presidency, you will see that we've been allocated 2,333,140 rand and some change. That's the total budget for the year. What we have agreed upon within program, that is now the GDC program, Gender, Disability and Children and Youth programs in the presidency, is that in the middle of June, we will go back to National Treasury and apply for additional funds if we pick up that in terms of the group of APEC priorities that you can see there in the presentation. If we pick up that we're running short of money, we will go back to the National Treasury and apply for additional funds. And we will then take those funds together and share, split amongst ourselves, and move on. Also, the other thing, Honorable Chair, is that the total amount for programs in the presidency is 9 million rand. So we've been operating at the cost recovery process, you know, because the chief director did not have a budget. So this year we've allocated 1 million rand for the chief director so that then she can be able to operate her office. The 2,333,000 that you see is the allocation from that 9 million. We've split it amongst ourselves, the three programs. And it's exactly the same amount for all three programs. Also, this amount, Chairperson, will be spent up to the end of January. That's our plan. We do not have a budget for the handover process. But what we'll do is that by September, we'll have compiled a manual that seeks to assist in the handover process. This process started at the Senior Management Services Strategic Planning Workshop of the Presidency, and it's a continuous activity. In that manual, we would like to add a section on the legacy of the presidency from 1994 to 2009. So that's how we will operate in terms of the that handover manual. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Benny, for your presentation. I just want to inform that I am really not happy with the allocation of the funds. It's very little, I must say. I mean, you are doing a year's work. You are still doing a year's work within this time period. So, you know, reducing the amount of money doesn't really make sense to me. Also, if you look at the mainstreaming of the APEC priority, I don't see any budget there as well. I don't see. Only thing I see here, before the APEC alignment of the national policy, I only see 50,000. But the APEC priority and allocation there, I don't see any allocation made there. I must applaud you here regarding the convention, and I must say I'm extremely proud that they are actually using South Africa as a pilot country. At the same time, we also need to be careful because it is a lot of work for South Africa and especially for your office and I think for JMC because we do have a role to play there. And I see 200,000 there allocated there. It's quite a little. Quite a little if I realize that you did speak about a roadshow before and so forth. So 200,000 quite is a little. I think it's a little. Little, how do you justify that 200,000 for that convention if it's so important and it needs to be implemented? If you could just give me some explanation there. I'll now open to the floor, honourable members. comments or questions, it's now up to you. I, Honourable Satuna, I see your hand. Other members, Honourable Cielo and Honourable Andrew. Honourable Satuna, if you could start off first, thank you.
For my purpose, maybe I'm a slow finger. I think it has become a standard norm and practice by various departments. You know, let alone the assumption that MPs are expected to know this. I think we need to be reminded from time to time what is the core business and mandate of your directory. I mean, for my people, that is critical. Because flowing from that understanding, determination of strategic priorities, evaluating your strategic priorities will actually enable me to make my own analysis and evaluation whether the allocation that is being given to you is sufficient or not sufficient. I'll tell you why I am saying that. Because I believe some of the issues that have been listed here, unless they are elaborated, they've got nothing to do with your core mandate. That's my belief. That's the first question. The second question, I think we are a directorate. And I want to have an understanding whether you are directly falling within the DG in the presidency or in which branch, because I know that there are a whole range of DDGs within the presidency, you know, I mean, SLI function. I'm asking that particular question because I know you don't have executive powers and, you know, to decide on some of the issues. They can even veto, can apply for 5 million, they can believe, no, this is too much, no, and reduce it. You just alluded to some of the things I'm saying, like, you know, writing a letter to departments, DGs, which we have handed over to the DG in the presidency. That will be the second question. You have spoken about the review, 15-year review. I think I personally welcome that. In fact, long overdue. But now, there are lessons about these reviews that we can talk about in South Africa. I want to check what lessons have you drawn from the 10-year review of the government of the Republic of South Africa, 1994 to 2004 review. I think my colleagues know about that thing. Flowing from that, what processes, you know, and methodology are you going to employ to realize that review? Are you just going to take documents from various department reports and all those things? How are you going to engage stakeholders within civil society in that particular process? Look at the expansion in terms of the process that you are going to review. In your elaboration of your national policy development process, you know, the initiative that you spoke about, you were talking about deficiencies in the integrated national disability strategy. And you only mentioned the page 7 of that some of the issues are actually being implemented. I'd really like to be given more information. Maybe you don't have to answer that thing. I don't think I still have a copy of the INDS. If we can have that thing so that we make our own evaluation. I don't believe, and I don't agree, you must convince me, it's none of your task to meet these municipalities. 285 municipalities. Just to go around Free State alone, I think it's one of the smallest provinces. That 2 million budget is small to meet, I mean, to meet those municipalities and all those things. It therefore raises another fundamental strategic and operational question. Are you operating in a silo? What is your relationship, both formally and at a strategic level, with provincial governments, you know, in terms of coordinating some of these tasks, like liaising with municipalities? Because I believe there are some OSBP offices, you know, within provincial governments, you know, because it could actually not alleviate your own financial spending, but also for purposes of coordination, you know, and proximity. So you are not saying anything about that thing, but you're just talking that you're going to meet these municipalities. If I'm not mistaken, there are more than 250, so it's still an expert in this thing. I don't know how you're going to realize that thing. I think this is quite over-ambitious. Lastly, here is a comment. APEC priorities. I'd like to convince is me, how you are going to do this thing. I don't think we are responsible, Chief, for doing all those things that are there. My understanding of your task is to coordinate and ensure that relevant departments of government that are being identified, you know, you coordinate and advocate that in this particular, let's talk about interim anti-poverty campaign and anti-poverty strategy. Which cluster of departments within government is being designated to deal with this particular issue? Advocate to ensure that they mainstream disability issues. Now you come with clear policy targets, this is what you want, then you develop monetary strategy. But you have just listed these issues here, not telling us how you are going to do it and all those kind of things. If you could elaborate, because if these things are quiet, I would believe that no, this is not your core business. It can be done by somebody else. Your task is just to ensure that you lobby and advocate that particular person and develop coordinating mechanisms how all other departments should engage with those issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honorable member. Benny, I think maybe you should answer that question. I think because we've got quite a list of members. So I know it's Honorable Cyril, Honorable Andrew, and then Honorable Max Austin. And then Honorable Gamidi, Johannes. Yeah.
Thanks, Chair. Let me start with the question around the core business of the OSDP. We perform specific functions, such as mainstreaming, capacity building, monitoring and evaluation, advocacy, and we've got international obligations. So the list of things that we put there in the budget as cost debt are exactly the core business of our work. For example, the IGDP would fall under the function of advocacy. The question of development of indicators would fall under monitoring and evaluation. So that's exactly what we do. Honorable Chair, on the issue around municipalities, yes, indeed, we are not going to meet the municipalities. We are giving them a capacity building program, which is coordinated by us. It's going to be done by SAMDI, it's going to be done by SAUDA and DPLG. So we've got partnership with all three entities. We targeted 255 municipalities because we can't do all of them, obviously. But we would group them into districts. So in the Free State, for example, you'd have about, let's see, Mukaka, Mutewo, and so on. So you take all those districts into one workshop, but they would send the representative officials who are heads of community development directorates as well as the OSDP desks in the municipalities to come to the training workshops. So we would not meet them individually. Part of the work is going to be done by the provinces, as we have started already in the Eastern Cape. That work is done by the provinces. We've started also in the Northern Cape, and that work is done by the provincial OSDP. So there is some form of coordination in between. I must say that as I've explained, part of the mandate of the OSDP is to provide guidance to government in terms of disability work. We would do it through the National Disability Machinery. So these structures that are there on double check are specifically meant to coordinate our work. The IDCC, the Interprovincial Forum, the National Disability Machinery, and so forth. On the question of the APEC priorities, We've listed them there, but what we've done also is that within the strategic plan, concept plan, we've taken the activities and mainstreamed them there. So what we would do, we would not necessarily do those activities per se as an office. It would be done by different departments. But if you look at the question of, let's say, for example, the anti-poverty strategy, there is a poverty war room where the OSTP is represented in the testing. So we'll make sure that the food parcels and the distress relief amounts are also allocated to households that have persons with disabilities within them. So that's the work that we'll be doing. The OSDP falls within squarely within the policy unit of the presidency. It's headed by the head of the policy unit, that they should extend. So we fall within that unit, and all our operations are precisely within that particular unit. We do our work on policy development around the work of PICAs, for example, the social sector, the economic sector, the international relations sector, and so forth. Chairperson, I must say I agree with you. Yes, the amounts that we have allocated there are really little. I know. I accept that. But you see, Chair, the problem here is that the budget of the presidency in general has been reduced by National Treasury. Without going into much detail, last year, the presidency had to hand over almost 10 million rand to National Treasury because we haven't used that money. So, as a result, Treasury took a decision to reduce the budget of the presidency in general. Hence, we then had to think within the program unit as to how we then allocate our money. So therefore, we split the money amongst ourselves. As I said, all three programs have exactly the same amount that you see here on my budget. And we've allocated 1 million rand for the chief directorate in terms of the operations of the office of the chief director. Because you see, in the previous year, I think she operated only at a mega budget of 250,000 rand. And so, I mean, really, she couldn't function. So what we've done, we consciously decided that no, we would then allocate an extra amount to her office so that she can be able to operate. For example, you know, where we have to take her with to United Nations and then Geneva or New York, so that we are able to operate at the same level. Yes, Chair, I agree with you. The amount that is allocated for 200,000 rand there in terms of the UN Convention is little. But the idea is not to start with a roadshow here and then. What we would like to do is to start first with a compilation of a training manual for government, but do a media popularization. We're not going to pay for the adverts. GCIS will assist us in that regard. We will do the adverts, TV adverts, radio adverts, but those will be paid by GCIS. The amount that you see there for 200,000 would be used particularly to do research around the training manual itself, to compile it and to publish it, but also to start with a pilot workshop, particularly for national departments, because those are the people that we are targeting first. In terms of the national department chapters, it's easy to train them because they're all in Pretoria, all of them. So, it's higher in booking of venue. We may just as well do that in the union building in terms of the size of the boardroom that we have. And so it doesn't really cost much to be training the government departments. We can get all 27 of them in one room and train them. Those are the focal points now that have been allocated by the DGs. Thanks, Jim. Oh, yes. The 15-year review. Yes. The methodology that we followed, Honourable Stoner, is that what we've done there, we took the report that we've been receiving within the last 5 years, let's say, for example. But what we've also done is to take the 10-year review report that we have and took some aspects out of the 10-year review, particularly on the chapter on findings. And we've taken that section, we placed it into the 15 year review, but we kind of sifted it a bit in terms of the information. What we've also done is to do a desktop research, thorough desktop research. We have gone into several departments where we wanted to see clarity on certain things, such as Department of Health, Social Development, Labor, Education. We targeted the first five departments where we were seeking clarity on certain aspects of implementation of policy, but also to look at the work that they've done in the last few years. Now, the methodology that we've used there is used by the whole of the policy unit, all the clusters of the policy unit. We then took the section on disability and placed it within the GDC and Y section, GDC and Y, gender, disability, children and youth section. And currently we are at a stage where we are finalizing the chapter on GDC and Y. It will appear in the 15-year review. In the next few weeks, Chairman, we will be publishing the chapter on disability. It will be on the website of the presidency. And so I would encourage members to honorable members to maybe take a look at it and see you know, what are the issues of interest to the committee. And those questions with us, if there are any questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Benny. I will allow Honourable Satuna, I think you may be able to follow up the exact one I'm asking, and then Honourable Silo.
I really don't want to raise a necessary alarm here. I spoke about lessons. South Africa has got rich lessons. I welcome that we are saying we are going to do desktop research and we are going to undertake all those set of activities. But at the end of the day, this 15-year report is going to be documented as Government of the Republic of South Africa status report on the disability. Am I right? Who are these disabilities? Where are they located? You know? I don't think that it's located in the Department of Health. I don't think they are located in the presidency. And I don't think they are located in your building. They are located within communities. Gamet, you know, when we were in Northern Cape, they were there. They were telling us their stories. In your approach and strategy, you don't tell us anything about engagement in civil society. You don't tell us anything about engagement with Parliament. I think we can actually retrieve a lot, you know, rich information from Parliament through its oversight activities in terms of other experiences of the disabled people. You know, it's a matter of fact. I didn't want to say this thing. When the 10-year review was released, organizations outside government were unhappy about it. Because they were saying this is the government perspective in terms of what they have done. And these things are about us, and we differ with some of the things that government says it has achieved and all those. So, for purposes of integrity and credibility of that report, it will be my submission to you. That's why I raised in another meeting that we really at times need to summon one of your DGs to come before us, because it's them who take decisions on this issue. Because for me, it's a token to collect government reports, you know, about these things. Right? And thereafter, I say, this is the state. You know? While that thing is not being informed by the real living conditions of the very people that we are talking about, you know, it's a token. I mean, we need to draw lessons from that. We need to draw lessons to what that conference CILO was about, where government had its own report, civil society had its own report. I think it was Beijing. The first one, not only the health one. Man. So those are the lessons for our country, our maturing democracy. And we cannot continue to be ignorant about those things. And out then, in the drafting of this report, to ensure at least we have some, you know, meaningful input from the civil society, because this is about them. So this is more of a comment, really, not a question, which I hope you pursue further with your principles. Thank you.
Thank you, Benny. Thank you, Honourable Member. Benny, is there something that you want to comment? Because I think that is just a comment that was made, so you take note of. Okay. No, fine. Honourable Tino? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair Tipton. Yeah, indeed, that's my first name. I love Ted. Chair Tipton, through you, Mr. Padime, I suppose I'm pronouncing your name correctly. You have spoken about advocacy as part of the work that you do. And, of course, flowing from that, you also have international obligations. I would imagine that apart from such instruments as the Convention on People with Disabilities, you would also be concerned about attainment of the 8 Millennium Development Goals to the extent that they impact on the lot of people with disabilities. And I have no doubt at the back of my mind that MDG 1, namely the eradication of abject or absolute poverty, is one goal that you would pursue with the greatest passion available, because people with disabilities, more often than not, are at the bottom of the pile insofar as the incidence of poverty is concerned. And having said that, you have included, of course, and correctly so, I believe, APEC priorities here. And taking into account the comments or maybe questioned by the Chair earlier about the absence of obvious costing of your program insofar as it relates to the APEC priorities, I share the same concerns. Because if you look, for example, at, say, the ECD program, Early Childhood Development Program, children with disabilities would require even greater attention because of their special needs. And yet, nothing is said here, at least insofar in terms of rands and cents, as to how, in relation to the lot of children with disabilities, would you then advocate for their rights? I have one case, and I think this case that I know, there are many other such cases elsewhere in the country where a grandmother is looking after a child with disabilities and she is short of money and she's unable, obviously given her socioeconomic status, to acquire any additional funds to ensure the well-being of that child. I know that you would not necessarily in your position be able to fund such a case, but certainly in terms of advocacy, you would be able to do something about that. And of course, you've mentioned municipalities in this regard. Now, these are the sort of gaps that I'm talking about, and there being no obvious budget for your programs in relation to the APEC priorities, and mindful, of course, of what I said about the MDGs, insofar as those would be part of your international obligations, of course, in addition to international instruments such as the Convention. So what I am saying, therefore, is that these priorities are quite fine, but I think there must be something much more palpable, much more obvious that you can point to say, this is how we are mainstreaming the needs of people with disabilities into the entire program. And Mr. Nachidenza being, as you said, the overall authority that you report to, with regard to your area of responsibility, I think you would have to persuade him even more strongly. The last two questions, you've talked about 10 million rand being returned to Treasury. Of course, departments have done that all the time. But it wasn't clear whether the 10 million rand that the presidency could not spend result of you exclusively, OSCP, not spending the money, or you taking the larger share of non-expenditure as OSDP. And why should you as OSDP suffer if indeed you've spent your money well before, even if there was to be a reduction in the overall budget of the presidency? I would like to believe that you would be much more passionate about these issues, because people with disabilities in society in general are very vulnerable. The very last one is the 2.3 million rand. Is it inclusive of salaries and operating costs and stuff like that, or is it just for programs? Because you've talked about almost 50% of that total budget being allocated to the chief director, if I heard you well. And perhaps if you could respond to that, I might follow up with a question or two later. Thank you very much.
Maybe I'd like to, you can answer, but I just want to add to that question. All that 10 million that was given back to National Treasury, was some of that money that was supposed to go to DPI, Disabled People International, in the conference? Because I remember the national expenditure money, I think there was about 3 million that went to that conference, but the conference did not take place in South Africa. It was moved to somewhere else. So I was going to ask you, that 3 million, is that 10 million, is that 3 million part of that 10 million that was given back to National Treasury? Okay. So then my question is, if not, then why is, as the honourable member asked, why is the office of the OSDP then suffering now? Thank you. Over to you to answer.
Thanks, Jay. I just want to clear certain aspects of the presentation first. You see, the idea of allocating 2.3 million rand per program came because we thought that the three programs will have to have equal share in terms of the 9 million rand that was allocated. The 1 million rand went to the chief director's office for operational reasons. The 2.3 million rand that we have here would be used particularly for programs. I one of the things I actually also have to clear is that of the 10 million rand that was sent back to Treasury, 4 million actually was allocated for the DPI Congress, which didn't take place. It was supposed to take place in South Africa. That money would come from the presidency to pay for the conference. And so what I'm trying to say is that because of the reduction of the amount, each and every program in the presidency have had to tighten the belt a bit and reduce the budget. I'm including every other program of the presidency, including the policy unit as a whole. So obviously you would have operations, strategy and operations, corporate services, finance, legal and executive services and so forth. So all of us have had to reduce our amounts. So it's not specifically the OSDP only that has reduced the amounts. All of us have done that in the presidency. With regard to the data priorities, yes, I agree with you, Honourable Member. The decision not to allocate funds, particularly for the APEC priorities, came because of the amounts that you see there. You see, because you see, when you look at the strategic objectives in the first part, you will see that we've done an activity budget there. We've costed the activities. Some of the activities we took and doubled up from the APEC priorities. So what we will do then, when we apply for extra funding in the middle of June to Treasury, we will then take some of the money and allocate it to some of the APEC priorities with special reference research to the ECD, the question that you've raised around the economic issues, you know, we would definitely allocate money for that, particularly with regard to the interventions in the second economy. So that's what we'll look at, and certainly we agree with you that we need to allocate money there. We will consider, yes, indeed, the issue of looking at how we work together with different departments. We would like to change that method. It's going to be something that is going to be difficult to do. We've asked that the DGs appoint permanent focal points in the different departments. So we're not basically working with health only and so forth. I must agree with Honorable Stoner. You know, the problem here, Honorable Member, is that the 15-year review has an interministerial committee chaired by Minister Yusuf Bahat. We met the interministerial committee on the 31st of March. We had a discussion with them, and we agreed in principle that because of the time that allocated for the 15-year review to be completed, we would have to do most of the work at desktop level and departmental level. And I know that, as you are saying, when we released the 10-year review, criticized very harshly by Parliament, indeed, when we came here to present, that we didn't actually consult sufficiently with the community. We will try to do that, Honourable Member. I take that your suggestion is very genuine. We would do it through either the NDM, the National Safety Machinery, and also through the DPOs, you know, such as TEFSA and Plan South Africa and so forth and so on, you know, other organizations. We'll certainly consider that. Thanks.
Thank you. Honorable
Andrew.
Thank you, Chair. I think by and large, some of the questions I wanted to ask have been asked. But I don't want to fight with you. The issue that you raise, like 9 million is one looks at it in terms of that has been allocated to projects, and the 9 million divided between the three of you. Well, if I remember correctly, I mean, I did not do math at high school. But somehow, even if you take away the 1 million rand that's been allocated for the chief director, that certainly there would be a surplus of close to, I think, 1 million that would be left over from the from the 9 million. So it does appear that we already are preparing to hand money back to the to Treasury, which is somewhat a concern. Especially with regard to the huge expectations out there, the work that you have outlined, it's enormous, a lot of work. And I think you have been very, very, I wouldn't even say economical, you've been under budgeting by and large for the work that you will be doing yourself at OSDP. That's the one issue. The other issue, one of the biggest challenges we face, and I'm happy to see that part of the plan is to look at a employment equity audit. Clearly, work done by the Public Service Commission has pointed to the fact that the 2% target is not a reachable target within the next couple of years. And they've also pointed to the source of the problem. Fact that those people responsible for employment, the human resource sector, that they, the leadership there, the managers, they completely have a lack of understanding of disability issues. So one would want to, I hope you would come here to say, this is a challenge, this is how we intend to address it, you see. Through, you know, the focal persons we have raised it before. The focal persons that are appointed are normally a senior admin officer, but it's a low-level staff member who has absolutely no decision-making or influence. He can't influence anything in his or her department. And certainly we have, in our work at VMC, interacting with the provinces through our visits. Comrade Sotona have made reference to the Northern Cape. Clearly they made it clear to us that they have enormous problems with regard to management taking a focal person serious. You see, that person doesn't even have access to the director or the DG, nor the political, yes, you see. So whatever reports are being developed, compiled at the grassroots level that really contain the gist of issues, that report is being watered down as it goes up in the value chain. So when it reads, the decision makers, there's nothing wrong with the report. It is a complete opposite of what it was when it was originally written. You see. So those challenges is something that we certainly have to address. Otherwise, we are not going to make any dent in what we actually want to do. The 15-year review will report that essentially disabled people are worse off than they were 15 years ago, you see. So, because of all these things, not that the policies are not there, it's how implementation is tangled, is frustrated, is in actual fact undermined. And just have touched on one thing, we've been very excited last year, Benny. I think you somehow made us very excited when you spoke about the mass rollout of the United Nations Convention, you see. The awareness that has to be raised at the grassroots level. You see, we were very, very excited, and as a committee we were looking forward to it, but it's now literally being put on a back burner. You said there are certain things that have to happen first. The manual, building the capacity and awareness and understanding of officials must come first before those that the convention is intended for. So will actually be briefed, be made aware, and informed about the convention. To me, it's a little bit doing things upside down. I understand implementation, the implementers, they have to be come to a particular level of understanding. But I thought that the recipients, the ones that is intended for, actually have more rights to know what their rights are, or what government even are doing about it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Member Benny. You can reply to that. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I suppose that the issues that Honourable Andrew raised mostly were comments, but I'm going to respond to a number of things. Yes, the overall reduction of the budget, Honourable Chair, I see the main concern really of Honourable Member. It's a matter that I would want to then raise with the presidency in general, as a member of the FMS. I'll certainly raise your concerns and also to my COO. But one of the things I'm going to do also, Honourable Chair, is to apply for extra funding. Honourable Details. Around the APEC priorities there will be an addition there in terms of the amount. One of the things we will do also, Honourable Andrew, to address your concerns would be to apply for extra funding for the UN Convention. So those will be the two issues where we're going to add funding. Well, I take the cue from Honourable Member to say that You see, the methodology of the rollout process has had to be restructured due to limitations here in terms of the budget. On the other hand, what we would like to then think about is how we are going to do a rollout campaign in terms of the relationship that we have with the civil society. We would want to consider that very, very thoroughly. But what we thought was that we have a time limitation on the in terms of reporting to the United Nations. We have to report in 2010, November. And now that we are a pilot, also, we are more pressured now to respond to the United Nations. So, at the conference of state parties in November, South Africa must make a presentation. And I think one of the things I'll raise there then is the issue that you've raised around, you know, the effectiveness of how we roll out the campaign. For some reason, we decided to start with government first, because we are of the opinion that they are the implementers of policies. And the sooner you get to them, the better. Because then they don't have any excuse of saying that they're not able to implement. Because then you would have built their capacity, you would have trained the focal point. The other matter, Honorable Chair, that the Honorable Andrew raised was an issue of the focal points. What we've done there, in the letters that we've written to Director General, we've asked them to appoint DFPs, right, disruptive focal points, from middle management upwards. So the people that we are getting are deputy directors and directors. Who will come to the machinery? Who will come to the interdepartmental committee, and so forth? So that has changed around. Yes, indeed, Honourable Member is right. Is correct. We've been having problems really with the senior admin officers coming to interdepartmental committees, and really, by the time the report gets to DG, it will be something else. But what we've done also there, Honourable Andrew, we've asked that when the people come to the committee meetings, they should ensure that the reports that they present there have been signed off by their DGs. So we would not take a report that has not been signed by the DGs, because the process is that we normally, after the presentations of the report, we normally compile a report for PICAS, for police unit, which would then go to cabinet. So that operational issue has been dealt with. We hope it's going to work. This process is taking place now as we speak, of appointing the focal points. We're getting a very good response from the DGs who are willingly doing that. Thank you.
Thank you, Benny. I still want us to note, honourable members here, that this is a committee, our committee's unhappiness, or we're not satisfied that the convention is not going, that it is going to the department to be, you know, workshop there first. I mean, we as a disability movement, or as a committee, we've been speaking now for the past 10 years that people on the ground are not benefiting. And I must say that I strongly support what Honorable Andrew said there. And I must say we were very, very excited about that workshop taking place, about the awareness on the grassroots. I think maybe should have somehow a parallel process, that when you make the officials and the departments aware of the training, I think maybe have another parallel process where the, you know, people on the community, the civil society, they are aware. We cannot do capacity building for departmental officials when our own people are not getting that capacity building. and they need to be capacitated, and maybe this can be a parallel process. That could be maybe one recommendation you could look at. Honorable Gamedi?
Thanks. Quite a lot has been said now, but Benny, hey, I don't want to talk just for the sake of talking. I want us to deal with real simple things. For instance, the one that has been raised by about employment equity. And this 2%. I mean, before you were in this office, this was the 2%. And for some time, there's been this issue about this 2%. And these are just simple things. This office is tasked with advocating and monitoring that these things happen, that we achieve this 2%. Now, if we as government are failing to meet our own targets, how do we expect then the private sector to do the same? And what mechanisms are there? I remember in one question when you asked the deputy president, she said it will go to a stage where we have to name and shame the department. We cannot have a policy of government and say this is what we want to do for years and then nothing happens. And then we'll keep on reporting that we're failing to meet the target. The second issue still that equates to that is also the issue of skills. Next year we might get the same report, develop skills, but how many people with disabilities have been developed within government departments? We could have this breakdown and say, this is how far we've gone. And more especially also on critical skills, not on the usual ones. It's unfortunate also that the chief director is not here. I would hope that when you reported that you even increased the budget from 250 to 1 million, at least there will be funds for the chief director to come also here. But then that allocation seems to instead in going outside the country to convention and so on. It will be interesting to get a chief director here and actually deal with these issues now that there is a budget. Their funds, because the chief director is part of the decision-making structure. And lastly, then, just clarifying this issue of, I heard when you were talking about this budget, that you finish it in January, the handing over and no budget. What is it really that you are handing over? What is it that you are not budgeting for? Are we not going to have an OSDP after January? What's going to happen, really? Don't scare us.
Thank you, Honourable Member
Finney. Yes, Chair, thanks. Let me start first by the handover process. You know, in the presidency, we are currently preparing a manual. The reason being that we have envisaged that what we would like to do is that we do not want to predict what would happen. The idea is to prepare a handover manual so that if when the new political leaders come in, we will be able to explain to them or maybe logically tell them what has happened in the last few years or what are the issues, the matters that are in place, what are the structures and so forth, that they then would be able to deal with those aspects. So it's a process of the presidency as a whole. PICAS is doing the same thing. With that manual, we should be finishing it by September. So we need to finish our activities by the end of January so that February, March, we are able to, you know, finalize those aspects. The point of clarity here is that we cannot say that there will be an OSDP, but we do not know what would happen in terms of structuring of the presidency. For obvious reasons, there would be changes. I suppose that, you know, there would be some kind of restructuring here and there. There would be some kind of strategic realignment here and there. We don't know. We don't know, but the idea is to have a manual that will be used when that restructuring is with regard to the 2%, you know, 10%, I think I've hammered on this matter quite a lot, especially when the Honorable Chair confronted me directly on this matter. Yes, I agree. Our main mandate is to advocate for this to happen. We have done that. We've done our work on the ground. We've asked, to an extent, Chair, we've asked the DGs to even sign in their performance agreement that they would meet the target. Right? We have asked that when DGs are being assessed, this matter should be part of the assessment. And that is happening. But the opposite, Honorable Government, is true. We've actually gone from 0.26%, can you guess, Chair, to 0.17%. You understand? You understand that now it's not, now we don't know what to do in the OSDP, because what we've also done, we go into departments unannounced. Every Tuesday, we go into a department and we say, put your statistics here, let's see. Skills development, numbers, employment, numbers. Accessibility of the building, let's see the standards. We do that unannounced. But, Chair, you see, the problem that we are having on the project is the response that we get from managers. And I've said that. The HR managers in government are not keen to respond positively to this issue. It's a policy issue. Yes, indeed. And I agree with the honorable members that we may not even reach this 2% by 2009. It's not something that's going to happen. Actually, we've put it for 2009-10, end of financial year, then. So, I suppose we need your help. We certainly need your help. It's either honorable, Chair, it's a matter that you probably then would want to raise in Parliament. Not as a debate, but I don't know how. I don't know that, you know, you might have some other avenues through the Speaker's office, through, I don't know, really. Because we've really done our work. I must be honest with you. We've done our work greatly in this matter. The problem is that now, under the government, we are moving the opposite direction in the government. We are now reducing it. It got towards 0.17%. And I said, Chairperson, to you, that the problem that we're still having in the public service is the retention strategy of persons with disabilities. People get disabled at work. Sometimes they're medically boarded. For some reason, I don't know why. And then there's an issue, Honorable Chair, that we've observed that on average, a person with a disability spends 18 months in government, 18 months in employment. And then they leave. So when they leave, they reduce the number of the percentages of the department. Because then they've got to go and look for other people now to increase the targeted number. So, Chair, I want to appeal to the committee. We need your help now. Because the issue here is that we've done all we could. We've set aside time to build capacity of HR managers in government. We've given them guidelines, Chairman. There is a technical assistance guideline, Chair. I think you know that. We've made a presentation here around that tag. And for some reason, people are just not responding. So we certainly need your assistance in that respect. Thank you.
Honorable Gamidi, is there a follow-up to that response?
To the issue of the chief director.
Oh, okay. No, Chair. Yes, I. You see that when the invitation came, it came to the OSDP. So we didn't have the inclusion of the chief director in the invitation. So that's what we received from the chairperson. No. You see, honourable member, please don't misunderstand. We didn't say that the chief director's budget is mainly to go abroad. I was giving an example that it would be the money that she would then use as well to attend with some of these conventions, such as the UN web that I'm doing, because I have to go, obviously, to New York almost twice a year to the United Nations to make presentations. it's not really money that is going to use to go abroad, really. We there are other operational issues in the chief directorate that she has to work on, because she's coordinating three programs, in fact four now, you see. And the reason we've increased her budget is precisely because of that, because now she now has to look after the youth desk as well, which was in the social sector chief directorate thing.
Andrew, yeah.
Two things. The issue of employment is a very, very important one. I'd say, and as Benny has indicated now, the state is actually going back, and there's a various numbers of factors that have been raised. I just wanted to indicate, as the disabled peoples of Africa in the Western Cape and Comrade Max himself would be able to substantiate that we've been interacting with the provincial government, the Western Cape in particular, and we begin to bear the fruits of that in that interaction, because more and more departments are now beginning to accommodate disabled people in employment opportunities. We've seen yesterday a whole range of adverts targeting disabled people, specifically coming from the Department of Community Safety. Public Works Transport and Public Works is actually the forerunner with regard to that, where jobs are advertised and those jobs have been set aside as per agreement with DPSA in the Western Cape for disabled people. That interns are set aside, identified specifically for disabled people. In the Department of Agriculture in the Western Cape, it's exactly the same person. So it does cause us to interact vigorously with the powers that be in the provinces where we are, and then we begin to see a change. And I think we must do that at the national level. We want to see the OSDP take a more aggressive stance, say, by pardon me for not using a more suitable word, you see. But we cannot allow that human resource managers get away with this change. We must look at not only at the employment, as Penny indicates, the retention, and in many instances, it is the circumstances under which disabled people are expected to work, where colleagues and supervisors make it life for them unbearable at work and literally cause them to leave a chairperson. So I think we must address those kinds of issues, and human resource managers, the DDs must take responsibility. A human resource manager is a middle manager, is not in charge of his department, he or she has a specific function and is accountable to senior, to others that are senior than him or her, and he must actually, or she must be forced to toe the line, a chairperson. I think this is the kind of stand that we must take, chair.
Elizabeth, I didn't see your hand, I do apologize, but you may ask the question.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is not a question. Light them up. Mine is not a question. I want to make a proposal that Benny give us the steps. And for each department, so that we can exactly see where there are improvements and where they are actually going back instead of going forward. And I also want us to debate this thing in Parliament as a member's motion, but we can't just keep it here. It's something that we need to debate, and we need to make sure that we get the steps from Benny so that we can be informed when we have that debate, because we need to do something. Thank you.
Thank you for that constructive suggestion, Honourable Elizabeth. I think we've got two roles, Amumat and Honorable Saturna, and then we will be closing because we still have the Umtubumbu fund to do, please, members. So those will be the two members, and then we'll be the ending off. Questions?
Including yourself, have all expressed dissatisfaction on the report of my comrade next to me. They are actually sending Benny back and saying to Benny, this is the first department ever where I hear that people say we don't have money or give money back or we don't need so much money. You know, every department always say they need more funds. And clearly, as the chairperson has said earlier, this money is way, 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 way. There's no way you can operate with this money. Let me give an example. The Department of Transport, the DG is saying that in senior management, there's 1% target. They got 1% employed person in terms of employment equity report. She's also saying the other staff is about 8%. Now, I haven't checked that because sometimes people say things which is not necessarily the case. I'm just saying, if what you're saying, at least then that is a positive sign. I wouldn't want to know from you, since you are meeting with him all the time. Is that information that you have from the Department of Transport in terms of the employment equity figure? The persons with disabilities, they say they got about 7% employment. If that is the case, we should see a look. What do they get right that the others can't get right? I'm concerned on the 15-year review report. Just as Chetona has pointed it out. I think that report, Chairperson, before it goes to Cabinet, the draft one, if it's available, it's important that we should have it. Because, you know, that would be then the picture of the status of persons with disabilities in the country. And we won't necessarily agree with it. So Benny said earlier he can make this available to us. So as soon as he can do that, I think we should get this report. And so finally, the UN Convention on the Persons with Disabilities, and since South Africa is a pilot, I want to reiterate your personal service in the Department of Environment, of Transport. And at DPSA, we believe if there's one department that discriminates against disabled persons, then it is the Department of Transport. Now, if you look at the issues of transport in the convention, then by 2010, November, when we have to report to the United Nations, we would not even meet 25% of what is set out in the convention. Now, We need to popularize this, not to the department, but to the disabled people out there. I'm seriously concerned with the budget that we have to popularize that to those millions of disabled persons out there. We seriously need to do a look, hey, look, your budget, and talking about meeting with the municipalities. I think it's been proven that the municipalities, the CDWs, are doing much better work than many municipalities themselves, because they are the people who go into the houses. They are the people who know the steps of the disabled people, things like that. Maybe we can get them involved. And if they are trained, then this, the population will really reach those intended persons. So I think, Chairperson, we really must really look and get those money back so that the message can go to those who need it. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Sidney, you will be the last person, and then you can respond. Thank you.
Chair, my other question, really, is proposals. I want to agree with Maxwell Moss on the issue of the CPA report. It's very imperative that the report should be people-centered and people-driven. That's what the RDP white paper says. Government has not abandoned that. Because that report is not a departmental report. It's going to be a country's report. And country's report essentially is about where are the gaps, how far we have gone, and how do we deal with the challenges ahead of us. And on that basis, it should therefore reflect scientific and accurate situation of the disabled sector within our country. And methodology, as you have explained it now, I don't think it's sufficient enough, to capture, that accurate. So I want to agree with you, Mixo. Secondly, my colleague, Comrade Mandela, I don't think we'll be fair, man, to expect Benny, director, is an operational officer in terms of structure of government, doesn't have the executive decision-making. Who is he to go and tell DG of any department, Now, it brings me back to the issue of our own modus operandi as a committee. And this thing must be understood in context. It is not about the person thing. It has been argued that we don't have to call you. In fact, even if you are sent by Comrade Joel as your principal, we must chase you away and demand to meet the DG. Because it is the DG who sit in serious cabinet meetings. It is the DG who sit in serious intergovernmental department meetings. It is the DGs who submit reports to cabinet, submit meeting reports to other president councils, where provinces and local government, convention. So that is the point of accountability. Not from an operation office. I think, Benny, you really do what you are instructed to do, with all due respect. So I think, having listened to everything you have said, I think we really need to say, yes, we accept this thing. But at some point, really, we need to take ourselves seriously and get the chief director and the DG to come and explain this. First, I don't think we're in the position to defend or to rationalize position around this transit, the end of January, as my comrade Moss. That is very strange. And really, because of the underlying political sensitivities around that thing and the manner in which you have explained it, I don't want to exhaust it further, but I think maybe it's one of the issues that we may want to pursue with Comrade Joel. I will tell you why. Simple reason. Government is government. Political office can come and go, but government remains government. You can't say, no, we are this government, we decided we want to distribute 1 million condoms. But because next year we have got a new political office bearers, we don't know, maybe they want to distribute only 50,000, you know. So we say, no, let's reduce the budget on the basis of that. Maybe there's a good reason for that, but I don't think you're in a best position to explain that. But your principals can be in a better position to do that. Okay, I also think at some point, at the committee, before the end of the term, one of the things we must do, Congress Mandela and Chairperson, is to convene. There are clusters within government. There's a social cluster, governance and monitoring cluster, economic cluster, and all those things. We should not shy away to call DG Vusi Madonse. He's heading social cluster. Why we're asking on every issue that all those departments in that cluster, in relation to policy priorities of government on disability issues, to say he must come and account, you know, with clear targets and time frames. Issues of economy, who's heading economic cluster and all those things. Because we're wasting our time, Benny will go, I think many times you put these things there and you're not even sure. You cannot tell your boss, hey man, chief, I'm going back to those people you have not answered. So I'm saying ourselves, we need to reorient and really relook at our own models of parameters. So, Chairperson, those will be my input for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honourable members. And thank you all for your inputs and questions and comments and proposals as well that came from the floor. Benny, I would like to thank you from the JMC side. Thank you to the OSDP. And I think, from Tuna, you summarized a lot and everything and so forth. But there are concerns. And it will, all these concerns will be obviously captured in our report as well. We as the JMC obviously have to take this matter forward. There are many issues of concern, and especially the one affecting the people on the ground. That one is of importance. And the 15-year review, I think their concern should be reflected in that report. I hope the OSDP has taken note of this serious concern that we have regarding that. I think also we asked for a draft of that report so that we as members could have a look and also input into that draft and so forth. So thank you for you attending here today. Members, if you could just break for 5-10 minutes. And before we go on with our next presentation, if we could just have a 5-minute break, speech. Thank you, members. We have present with us today the Informable Fund, and they will be speaking on the strategic plan of 2008-09. As well as the budget. I will ask Mr. Kekana, I seem to have your attention again, if you could just introduce your delegation to us, and then we'd like to start on the presentation immediately. Just hold quickly, Honourable Moss, I see your hand is up.
Chairperson, I just have to let you some check from Somalia there, and
So you'll be leaving at 12? You're leaving now immediately? Now? Okay, now understandable. Okay. Honourable members, we hope to finish with our meeting by 12. So that is the time frame in which we are doing our presentation. Just keep that in mind. Because we do have many members who will be leaving them, they have flights to catch. Okay, so hand over to you. Thank you very much. Speaking on that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm here with my colleague, Baba Giovanni, he's a parliamentary officer, and Shanti Governor, she heads up our operations and support division. And Mr. Mjali Mungeni, who will also be taking us through the presentation, and towards the end, I will take over from the
if you allow me, just I'd like to hand over to Mungeni to start with the presentation.
Thank you very much. Honorable Chairperson and the members of the committee, good morning to you all. I hope we all each have got copies of the presentation, so we'll be taking through the slides as we have them in the presentation. The first slide really gives you the overall content in terms of what we'll be taking you through in terms of the presentation itself. We'll look at our project priorities for 2008. We'll look at operational review of the organization in terms of how we performed over the past financial year. Just preview of that. We'll speak to some challenges that we are experiencing and which we'll have some discussion on together with yourselves. And we'll also give an update in terms of the phased measure between the National Youth Commission and the Internet Youth Fund. And of course, we'll also then take you through the numbers in terms of our budget and cash flow statement. So that's what we'll overall be talking to in terms of the agenda as we have prepared it from our side. Just to go straight to the slide number three, which highlights the strategic priorities of the organization. The first one that's looming large really in terms of the backdrop is the restricted funding that we have for the year 2008, which is unprecedented in terms of our funding and cash flow situation as we follow this fund, and which will really restrict an impact on our operations this year. The second priority and issue that will be strengthening is our existing relationships with the government departments, and about 19 of them that we have that we're working with through the various programs, especially the National Youth Service Program. And given the restricted funding, we'll spend a lot of our time and effort in terms of mobilizing resources from the public as well as private companies through their corporate social responsibility programs. And there is an initiative which we have been talking to the committee about, which started this year, the Invite a Person with Disability to Work campaign. That will be one of the big things that we will be doing this year in terms of taking it to the entire country from the pilot that we started this year. And also, can just continue. Okay. The second last priority will be the participation and involvement of young people in terms of the hosting of the 2010 FIFA World Cup in South Africa. We know that it's only 24 months to go, and we were envisaging that by July we'll be starting with a program of involving young people in the preparation of the host country side of the 2010 FIFA World Cup, 2010. And also, we will, from this year onwards, something that the committee has been talking to us about, we'll be opening our support to the broader audience and members of the of community who have got disabilities, taking beyond like the work that is done in terms of the Invite a Person to Work campaign. So that will be the priority in terms of what we'll be focusing on, of course, the measures as well with the National Youth Commission. In terms of the next slide, I will ask for the IFS of the technology to be failing us. We can just focus on the slides that we have hard copies, thanks to that, once we can start to focus on. The slide number four gives you a performance at a glance of the scope of this fund starting in 2006, 2007 financial year up to this current past financial year. 2007, 2008. You'll see that international service in particular, we've seen a growth more than treble the growth from 2006 up to where we are now, where we involve more than 57,000 young people in terms of the national youth service. And with the graduate increment program, where we prepare young people for world of work who are coming out of tertiary institutions, and matriculants, also more than doubled our efforts from the previous year. Here we are sitting now at 3,300. And followed by entrepreneurship education, there we reached just over 44,000 young people in schools and creating awareness around entrepreneurship. With enterprise finance, we averaging about 20,000 over the last 3 weeks, over the last 2-3 years. And with business support, just over 10,000 young people with assisted with the support of voucher program, and also solicited volunteers who participating in the volunteer in action mentorship service. We have over 600 of them that are in our books at this point in time. And we are also facilitating business linkages for young people. And in this instance, we help young people access more than 250 million dollars of business opportunities. And of course, there's working over just below 500,000 in the last year of our operation. If I can just move on to the next slide. The next few slides then will just be the details in terms of when of what you have already explained with the national youth service, and as you can see the numbers there, 57,000, with education, 24,000, and also we've helped capacitate teachers in particular so that they can institutionalize the education within the curriculum of the school. And on page slide number 6, we have a granted development program. We've been able to place more than 1,108 young people in jobs. And of all the people who are participating in this job preparedness program, less than 5% actually drop out, which I think is a good standing concern. Slide number 7, the Service Workshop Program and the Volunteers in Action Mentorship Service, and just a repetition of the details of the program, which I've already alluded to earlier. And on slide number 8, you see that we have a number of companies that we are sourcing business for young people from. And these include Nestle, MTN Hot Dog Cafe, as well as Sensory. But there's more, this is just a sample of those that are supporting the program, where we provide young people the opportunity to sell directly some of the products that the company has, or actually get opportunities in terms of outsourcing some of the non-core business from these companies. And on the next slide, the enterprise finance slide, over 20,000 young people assisted, and this has led to more than 25,000 jobs that were created. Out of the loans that the young people used to start businesses or expand their operations. It was interesting to note that more than 90% of the participants of the our enterprise financing program are women, and the repayment rate remains constant at about 85% for the microenterprise level. And we've also been successful in leveraging funding for a joint fund that we started to have financial year between ourselves and Old Mutual, where they come in to the party with about 100 million to focus specifically on the the next slide, slide number 10, something that we've spoken about in this particular committee in the past. We have been able to successfully launch a pilot at this stage of the invite a person with disability to work campaign, wherein we were able to place more than 1,200 young and not so young people with disabilities. With 65 organizations and government departments for over 2 days, and also with the promises of some of them to take these young people and other people's responsibility on permanent employee, and this company to that the one picture that you saw there, you know, was passing the partner program. So it's something that we are proud of, something that we take to scale for the next year, because at this point in time we're only able to do that to test it in Q4 projects.
Thank you. Maybe just to conclude the lack of time. One of the things that Mulini alluded to is the fact that this year we had made a submission for funding to the tune of 424 million rand, and our allocation is 5 million rand. Now, that very first slide that you saw, which talks about the target for 2008-9, it means that we have to actually cut a lot of those targets by about 50-60%, which means that, you know, we'll have to scale down quite a lot. We do not believe that there is any substance in the reasons that were advanced by National Treasury. We met with them 2 weeks ago on Monday to talk about this particular problem. There is still no substance. We believe that the business plan that we have submitted, it is not the best in government, probably among the best in government. So there isn't an issue of putting in you know, a request without any substance. We also believe that our track record as a fund so far, I think it's one of the few organizations that we've never had qualified audited financials. We haven't read in the papers that the CEO has stolen 5 rand, whatever the case might be. We've really been running a very solid and a very tight operation, even though we are young people. And we are quite surprised with the particular decision that has been made. One of the things that we, in fact, have commissioned research now, and we'll probably release something in June, is that when you look at young people, I mean, there's about 6 cohorts of young people. I'm on slide 12. We've got unskilled and unemployed young people, and that's the kind of young person that we want to focus on. And then you have employed and underemployed young people, and of course then we've got young people who are in education and training. That's where the 125 billion rand government spent in education goes to. Then you've got unemployed graduates, that number has been growing steadily. Then you have youth in prison. And then of course the last one would be young people who are self-employed. So that's kind of like if you disaggregated who the young people are that you would be looking at. Now, one of the things that we find it quite curious is the fact that you have a situation where, and this comes straight from government finance, is that you've got 161,000 inmates, and government spends 12 billion rand on young people who are in court with the law, and spends 5 billion rand on the last cohort of unskilled unemployed. Even if you were to take into account the monies that are spent by other programs, I think it's an unproportionate amount of number that you can, you know, that one can look at that. Why is it that this government, you know, can spend more money on youth in prison and less on young people who are unskilled and unemployed? You have 1,237 prisons, so we've got more prisons than we have FET colleges. And yet we've got problems with issues around, you know, skills, training and so on. You could look at the staffing. I mean, we talk about total probably has about 300 people. We have here about 42,000 people, and not near the importance of doing this. But we just feel that it's not proper. That if you look at like 14, just where that money goes, you see that there is an amount of 1.3 billion that is spent on care, which is mostly healthcare, development of about 396 million, social integration 386, and so if you take total amount of funding available for development, you're talking close to about 1.92 billion rand per annum. That goes to 151 young people. If you read the report, it will tell you that of the independent judicial, the correctional services review is that 11% of young people reported to have participated in these activities. So, I mean, this is a very interesting thing that we have a situation where we've got almost 7 million young people who, in terms of the latest labor force survey, if you take both the narrow or even the expanded definition, you take the 3 or something odd million young people who are unemployed, and those who have given up looking for work, which are another 3 million people. There are 7 million young people, and we don't believe that the resources that are put at play for the development of young people is justified. Then they look at a love life, we've got 63 to 73 million rand. If you look at the amount of money that is poured on recruitment, mass participation is for kids in schools and so on. That's about 341 million rand has been budgeted for this year. And community development, under social development, is about 5.8 billion. Then, of course, when you go to labor, where you've got a lot of money for training, if you look at the funds there, you have about 118,000 young people that are trained, and the breakdown there in terms of EPWP and so on, you can see those. But if you look at the amount of money there, you're talking about 7.5 billion rand for training 118 million young people. All we asked for this year was 424 million young million rand, so that we can afford 74,000 young people to go into service. There is absolutely no reason why that cannot be done. And there is absolutely no substance to any of the issues that have been raised. Now, the URF measure has, we've had 3 meetings, but maybe just to jump on to slide 19, we'll come back to that. When you look at our cash flow, and this is a cash flow that we discussed recently, we closed this financial year with 401 million, but of which 399 is committed to projects, and we've got contracts that are legally binding that we have to pay out. Last year we paid, you see, project disbursement line of 369 million. We paid 369 million rand out. This year we're projecting we'll pay 399 million rand. So that is the amount of money we have, is the amount of money, because we only commit if we have the funds. We do have, when you go to the next slide, 20, you will see that in terms of the reserves, we only have 5 million rand of reserves coming through, which we are likely to spend is the 5 million rand that has been put forward this year. But all our operating costs and overhead for this year, we will cover that amount from interest income, from the loans that we have funded. So it means if we didn't have any interest income in loans, we wouldn't be able to advance, be able to proceed this year. So quite fortunately, as Mbongeni reported, we've got about 85 to 90% repayment rate, and that's the money we will use to pay our salaries and to make sure that our services can continue. So our plan for this year, when we go to slide 21, was that we have about the money that we asked for. It's about, in fact, right now we're kind of like living a lie. We've got loans approved, letters sent to clients, 14 million rand, which we think we'll be able to pay. But one of the big problems we have is that we've got projects that are in the process and should be approved. So it means this year, totally, we cannot approve any project because most of our money has to go towards our fixed costs. And then we've got the micro loans and the youth service programs and also the voucher program, where we'll also be only able to do things within an amount of about 71 million rand. So the funds that we ask and the funds where we are, and a lot of the work of the 217 million rand of this one is work that has already happened. So we're not asking for money where we still have to figure out where it has to go, and these are things that are detailed in the business plan. Our plan for this year was that we wanted to open a youth advisory center in township, because we have been forced to operate in town, because that is where, if you're in Johannesburg, then young people from Daily 10 town and Ekuru Lane and so on, they will have to come to Johannesburg. But in Pretoria only, on a quiet day, our center sees 250 people. That we can't do that. It's not right. I mean, 200, that means the waiting, the queuing, and so forth, and even the quality of the service we provide. On a very busy day, they are able to see about 850 people. We don't see any reason why this government in this democratic year should not be having offices in Mamelodi, in Atlasi, in Mangaung, in the townships where young people live. Because many people, you know, phone us on mobiles and tell us they've got business plans. That is not how we should be providing services to young people. We should be in township. We should be in Kailisha. We should be in Gugulethu. We should be in Daung. We should be in Mafikeng, and many other townships where there's vast numbers of young people who are looking for opportunities to be supported. So, Madam Chair, our plan for this year is that we have decided that we will go on a very aggressive public drive to raise money from the public. We have decided to launch a website where we'll be asking members of the public to sponsor a young person. So, for example, if a young person has got a loan, we'll put up their loan and application and everything on the internet so that members of the public can choose to fund that young person at whatever rate that they will bid. So that, you know, at least many of people are looking for funding, we don't turn them down. So we'll be asking members of the public to give us funds directly. Secondly, we are on a very aggressive drive in terms of fundraising and donations. I mean, already Tata from India has committed 5 million rand. We've already raised 100 million rand from all mutuals. So we'll continue to do those kind of things to raise money from corporates and donations. But one of the questions that I keep asking is that, you know, why should we care more about your own government? Why, you know, if we're putting up 100 million rand, you know, where are you meeting us halfway? And that's a very difficult question that we find it quite difficult to answer. But be as it may, we have decided that we will be going on a very serious public drive to raise funding from the public and also from international donors. You know, we've already been to the UK, and people have shown that, because we will not stop providing services to young people simply because we haven't received any funding from the fiscal. Madam Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity that you've given us. So our aim really is that whatever shortfall we have, we continue to raise the funding from there. And as the moment said as well, the major process is going well. We've had three meetings, you know, and we are drawing up a business plan. We hope by October 2008 we'll be able to present a business plan to cabinet. And in terms of the timeline, we're not sure we'll be able to meet the ANC timeline in terms of by September. We believe that we'll have a business plan and so forth, but all the legislation and everything that needs to take place, we think it will probably be happening around about next year. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your presentation. Before I hand over to the members to ask questions, I just want to know, on page 20, you said the interest around how much will that interest be to get in, as you said, around about 95-80% of the loans are being paid back. Roughly how much is that amount, if you can give us an estimate, okay? Is there an amount that you can say that, you know, you are expecting back from those loans? Can you answer me that
okay,
one now?
Yeah, on page 19, Madam Chair, you'll see we've got opening cash, we've got grant income, and then we've got other income. That other income, 171 million rand, comes squarely from the loan book. So that money we make ourselves from the loans that we have. So that would be about 171 million. And that is the 171 million rand. When we go to page 20, those six project commitments towards the end, you see 121, 176. So those are commitments. These are mostly monies that we have to spend supporting our advisory centers and the youth points, the small ones that we have. We've got 121. Advisory centers, as you know. So that's roughly about 1 million center. But of course, most of the money goes to the bigger ones. So that money is fixed. So that's fixed cost that we have. And then with the balance, we've got operating expenses about 63 million rand, which is what we spend, you know, in terms of our operating overhead.
No, fine, thank you. Honorable Mendes, I see there's one hand on what I want to do, and Honorable Filo, and Honorable Petula. Okay, I'll hand over to you first.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I want to thank the fund for a very good presentation, but it was presented in a very fair way. I just want to ask, because the biggest challenge that they are raising is the issue of income for them to fund their project. Now, clearly, Mr. Kakane has indicated that our government doesn't care about the youth, the unemployed youth, the youth out there. Indicated that they put it out, the treasury in pledge only 5 million rand for this financial year. Now, in however one looked at it, it is a matter of serious concern. But perhaps one don't understand the full picture. Why only 5 million, and how different is it to what have been received last year, if anything has been received by Usubungu Youth Fund? So I think it's important just to assess that and understanding exactly how this 5 million came about, because clearly, as per your presentation, it does seem that you would be forced in the course of the coming year to reconsider your service and even closing down your operations. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to the delegation from Umsobongo. Just at an operational level, I know of quite a few youth that you, for instance, granted vouchers, and they would then be ready to start their own project, and yet there would be confronted with frustrations caused not by yourself but by the municipalities, because land would not be made available or whatever kind of infrastructure. What is it that you are doing as someone to follow through those kinds of frustrations and to help unblock blockages? Because if you've granted them vouchers and they are supposed to be skilled and run their own concerns or entities, it's as good as not having received any kind of help from yourself if you can't see those projects through with the kind of support that I'm talking about. You lament the fact that more money is spent on youth in prison as opposed to unskilled and unemployed youth, etc. Quite a legitimate concern, but I would imagine that it is a catch-22 situation, in the sense that more Hua youth, because of their socio-economic loss, would be more vulnerable, more likely to commit acts that would make them to be in conflict with the law and so forth, and ultimately would find themselves in prison and so forth. And in the context of restorative justice, and instead of beating them or beating the psychology of crime out of their minds using electric shocks and stuff, we are trying to rehabilitate them back into society. And insofar as we are a society in transition, from the dark days of apartheid and so forth, wouldn't you say instead of simply comparing 5 million rand with 12 million rand or whatever they use, the 12 billion, the 12 billion, I think 5 billion compared to 12 billion, wouldn't you say let's get even more money for youth that are unskilled and unemployed so that they can be more skilled and even try to get those that are already in prison out of prison and to join those that are out of prison in normal life, etc. Just lastly, you seem to be suggesting that for the remainder of your project, you will have to rely really on philanthropists. You've talked about Tata and many others and the frustrations that they express with regard to what government is doing to meet them halfway, whatever that means. So basically it means that the window of soliciting more funds for your program to help extricate young people out of miserable conditions is closed. Is that what you're telling us? Earlier on, the office on the status of OSDP, the township that I beg your pardon, the OSDP told us that there still is an opportunity for them to go and ask for more money for their programs. Of course, obviously, compared to yourselves, their programs are, I mean, we're talking millions, not even billions, etc. So, is there an opportunity for you in the context of PFMA and whatever to ensure that more money is obtained from National Treasury? And you seem to be making a very strong empirical case here, comparing what's been spent on youth in prison and so forth. So, I would like to understand whether that sister is indeed available to you. Yeah, and maybe there's a need, I'll follow up with more questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Fitzgerald?
Yeah, Chair, just a few questions. The first one on graduate development and job preparedness, I can see that you're making strides in that respect. Also, entrepreneurship education, but I'm not sure how you are doing it. Are you doing it yourself? Do you have internal capacity? Are you sourcing it out? If you are sourcing it out, what capacity have you invested on, you know, out there? So that you must actually look beyond the measure process, where you are able to say, this is the capacity that has been built, and how do we realign our approaches, you know, by targeting various government agencies and departments in terms of further, you know, building and consolidating that capacity. So, that is the context of my first question. The second one is around rationale. What is it? Treasury should have said why they have not decided to give you this money. And it may not make sense to you, but I think we also are entitled to know what they have said. You know, because Chairperson, my view is this is not different from what the OSDP has said, although the context differs. OSDP was saying no transit in January, you remember Congress government, and it never made sense for us. Ne? So that we know precisely what reasons they have given, so that if we have to make intervention, we actually make intervention after having closely examined the reasons that they have provided. But my view is the task of skilling young people, the task of getting young people into work, cannot be postponed because there's a decision to merge youth commission and Umzobomfu Youth Fund. I think that's the bottom line. And I'm not presuming that this is the reason maybe Treasury has provided. But I think if that is one of the reasons, we may as well have to intervene at a political level with the political principal, Treasury, you know, and the Minister of Labour, and see how that problem can be dealt with. Because when I look on your statistics in terms of applications, you know, that you've already approved, you have sent letters in some you have not sent letters, you know. For me, it's not just about numbers, you know, but it's about making a dent in the fight of our government against poverty, against unemployment, you know. So that is quite critical. Lastly, Chairperson, this is just a comment. Maybe let me put it as a question. I don't know what was the basis of Philo Ditebe's question on assisting young people, for instance, facilitating processes for them to get land from local government. Because I find it difficult in that question. I suppose you do diligence tests to say, here's an application from Philo Ditebe, not in that process. A civil law in terms of this application going through all relevant spaces. Because it raises a question to me in the context of what you have raised conversation. That you cannot approve an application of somebody who says that he got a good business plan and he wants to build something that will wash the car. When you're not sure whether that person will have a space where he can wash the car. This is the basic question I'm asking. So as you answer, so you must also give me some kind of an idea around that thing. That would be my last question.
Thank you. Honorable Namiri?
Thanks, Chair. Now, yesterday in the afternoon, Chair, when we were leaving Parliament, I saw next to the old assembly a coffin.
Still
there?
I got a shock of my life.
I was surprised. But then today in this presentation, I thought somebody was reading an obituary on them. So I can reconcile the two. Why we had a coffin and Chairperson, you know, we have quite a number of questions. At the same time, we cannot ask questions. Because there's one question that needs to unblock questions. Somebody needs an author and explanation. It's either Msobomvu or Treasure. One of those two. So in order for us to get this explanation, maybe we should give Msobomvu a chance to explain to us why this drastic drop of allocation of funds. So that we get an explanation from Msobomvu, and I'll propose that we try and get an explanation from Treasury so that we can make an informed decision. Thereafter, I'm sure questions can follow. Thank you.
Thank you. It's better to give us and send that answer the last question first and do it that way. Then you can proceed with the rest of the questions. Thank you.
All right. I just want to, in the next few seconds, just sketch out for you what has happened as far as funding is concerned or budget allocation is concerned. You'd remember that in 2001, we got the allocation of 855 million rand.
How much?
855 million rand. So that was a one-off allocation. So between the years 2001 and 2006, we didn't receive any funding from the national government. And then we also then got an allocation of about 400 million rand in 2006-07, which we could reflect at the end. In 2005, we were realizing that our reserves were, because what happened is that we took the money from government, we put it into our reserves. And every year we spend money, say, 200 million, then we transfer the 200 million out of our reserve to match the funds that we would have paid out or committed. So we realized in 2006 that if we were to go to scale, because scale is one of our strategic priorities, that, you know, given the scale of unemployment, we can't do small things. We have to do things in an efficient way, but in a way that also makes a meaningful impact. We prepared a business plan in 2005-06 that actually asked for 2.5 billion rand over a period of 3 years, because we felt that that's the kind of scale we require to address the kind of challenge we face. Now,
when it was established, it was said that there was no mandate, there was no formal mandate in the form of a legislation or an act or anything. It was just a decision that was taken, but not formalized in terms of a legislative enabling platform. The decision was then taken that no, in 2006-07, we will give you this once off additional allocation of 400 million so that you spend time. So we don't give you the 2.5 billion rand, we give you the 400 million just so that you can continue for the coming year and give you enough time so that you can finalize your mandate. A task team was constituted consisting of labor, the part of labor and the board. We then came up in August 2007, submitted a proposed mandate document, an institutional form, which was to be tabled to cabinet in order for us to have that mandate formally, recognized or established. That is a process that we has been left there, and it has not been concluded. The second thing that happened was, you'd remember, another decision was taken by government was to review development funding institutions and their mandate. Treasury went and hired an external consultant to come and do this particular review. And that review made certain recommendations, some of which we agreed with, some of which we did not agree with. And that is where the problem lies. One of the suggestions was that Mtsobomvu must hand over. It's not there's this definition that this consultant from the International Finance Corporation, Andrew Danino, came up with, and we disagreed with him, and I don't think the only DFI who disagreed with the findings of that review. I think many DFIs will find this disagreement. Made a recommendation that we are not a development funding institution, because a classical a development funding institution cannot give grants like we give for training, vouchers, and so forth, and at the same time give loans. Our argument was that we moved on to this one-stop-shop approach or integrated approach to development, because many young people, as Honorable Sello says, not only do they require a business plan, but they also require funding. And we know for many young people who have been unemployed for 5 to 6 years, it's a huge effort for them to enter our door. Now, for us to refer them from one pillar to post, having helped them in one instance, and then say go somewhere else, it doesn't work. And the National Youth Policy advocates for integrated approach to youth development. And if we were to come with definitions of a development funding institution or a development agency, and yet we say we're a developmental state of its own kind, what are we talking about? So we disagreed with the whole notion. Secondly, there was this curious suggestion or recommendation that some of them must transfer its enterprise development activities to entities in the DTI, such as CEDA, CULA, and so forth. One of the questions we asked was why? What is it that they do that we don't do, and what is it that they do better than we do? So we found it quite curious, because we believe that many of the institutions that has actually resulted out of this transfer, it's not like people are head of cattle, you can just transfer them from one to another. The services will collapse, and there is no rationale for doing that. There is no socio-economic rationale that makes sense as to why that should happen. So we disagree with that. Then another recommendation was that our lending book is not sustainable. Now, our SME book is profitable, as we speak. We're making money. I mean, you can see the numbers. We're making 171 million rand. And these are numbers that are audited. These are not phony numbers. These are numbers that are audited. Our performance, equally, which was raised, our performance is audited. In terms of the Public Audit Act, our numbers that we show you here, Ernst & Young has to, or whoever it is, has to audit them every year. Now, in as far as microfinance is concerned, our feeling was, you must make a decision as government whether you want to have because we don't know any microfinance operation which has been giving people money at fair rate and is profitable within 7 years. And I spoke to a lot of practitioners in this field, both local and international, and our book is less than 3 years. But also is the government must make a decision. If you want universal access, the fact is, in Bethlehem or in the Karoo, I'll only be able to make probably around 5 or 10 loans, but we'll still incur the same cost we'll incur in Mangaung. If you want to provide services to government, you must know that there will be areas where, for purposes of development and not to discriminate, in terms of universal service, you have to go to Ulundi, even if you're only going to make 100 or 500 loans, whilst you'll be making 10,000 loans in Devon or Tepin. So we also didn't agree with that. Now, in the process of that, we had quite a huge fallout with officials within the National Treasury. And the Minister of Labour did support our submission to Mr. during the budget review. He did sign the request for additional funding. So that is one that was put on the court. So we believe that, and that is one of the reasons why I'm not necessarily opposed to that we need to review in the way in which some of these decisions are made, because some officials sit somewhere because we had some intellectual disagreements with them. They then go and block applications for funding, because when you look at the letter that was sent to us for saying that we have money and that money must be spent on for this year, and we said to them 2 weeks ago, and they now agree, yes, the money has been committed. You actually cannot commit. Now, you can see that there was no thorough thinking in that decision. It was purely an arbitrary decision that was made has led to this decision. And fortunately, we have an ISO 9001:2000 certification. So in terms of our systems and operations and efficiencies and inefficiencies, we can benchmark ourselves with the best institutions in South Africa, and we believe that we are amongst one of those institutions. So it's not an issue of that we are wholly inefficient or we are, there is no substance like that that can be backed up in terms of numbers or in terms of evidence. And then I'm an accountant, so we can argue those numbers through and those kinds of So that is what has happened. And now in the process, then there was a whole issue around the measure. But I agree with Honorable Tutula that you cannot say, in fact, in the period when you're measuring, it's when you're supposed to be giving comfort to your employees. Because when you take away the funding, and the measure in itself creates uncertainty, then what will happen is that when the youth development agency is formed, we'll have lost people. So in fact, you are weakening a structure that you should be strengthening in a year where your uncertainty from a policy point of view is being created. So that is what has happened. And so, I think that is what we believe, that there is no substance. And of course, this is subjective views. But I believe that even if we were to have an objective view on these issues, I think we would, that the results we provide, if viewed independently, would stack up. So I'm not sure. Maybe I should pause there. There are other questions that were asked, but maybe there's a follow up on this question. But as I say, that is a question, and probably that is typical of how decisions in government get made. You know, some officials, someone don't like you, and they just block your application, and people sign letters just to justify it. And maybe that's one of the cultures that should be looked at. You know, because I think it is quite problematic.
I see many hands of follow-up questions from Honorable Andrew, from Honorable Fido, Honorable Gamedi. I see your hand up, right? Yes, I think, let me start with Honorable Gamedi first, and then we go to the... Thanks, Chair,
but at least I did say maybe we'll have some, space to ask questions. But this is really unbelievable. Talking from where I sit, that it would leave us to assume that because there is a measure, one, two, maybe because there will be new leadership, then such actions would happen. my proposal, Chair, is we engage with other structures, more especially the Department of Labor, the executive, and also Treasury on this issue, so that, you know, we get both sides. Thereafter, I'm sure we can engage Sarah and even other people. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would wish that the CEO makes available both a report on the budget that has been submitted, signed by the Minister of Labour, as well as the communication received from Treasury. I agree wholeheartedly with Comrade Gamede, that as well as Comrade Satomana indicated that there has to be an intervention from our side. We must engage with the other party, in particular Treasury. But Chair, Mr. Kikata have mentioned that the Treasury officials somehow have a sense of heart. They understand the issues now better in the second meeting that you have indicated. Does that mean that the 5 million is the result of this sudden understanding of them, or has there been no change at all? I think this will assist us also in our further engagement of Treasury. Thank you. And perhaps when we engage Treasury, it must be done with the Minister. They must indeed be present in that meeting, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. As a follow-up to the questions I've asked, I would like to know, I'm sure that shouldn't be a problem for us to get the review that was done on BMI with specific focus on Sobongo and, of course, the reservations that they have with regard to what the IS so far, then I would indeed share their concerns, because where we come from, we ourselves have tasted that, and there is no way that we can just proceed if we are from Sweden or Norway or Switzerland or something like that. We have huge disparities, and many of which are indelibly etched on the psyche of our society, and the youth have not been left unscathed by that. And therefore, there would indeed be a strong case to be made for youth to accept Sobongo youth fund services, particularly where they live in townships. I'm a very strong advocate myself of that, so I refuse to have me tell you to set up my official constituency office in town. And finally, I succeeded in setting it up in the township to address precisely this very concern that you are raising, of course, in relation to the broader community. So I would like to make that request with regard to the DFI review. And lastly to say, with regard to this particular review that has been done, is it a done deal? That the government has accepted the recommendations of the IFC and has it considered? You said that the Minister of Labour supported your argument. What exactly is the status of that report in relation to the argument that you posited as we speak? Because I think this has quite huge ramifications going forward for the development of youth in general in our country. And I do hope that this particular argument that you are positing in the process of a measure will indeed be taken into account, because we can no longer just justifiable as that cause maybe rely on an argument of the legacy. Yes, the legacy is with us, going to be with us for a long time. But at this point in time, we are in power. What resources we have available, we must make use of those effectively to change the quality of life of our youth. Because, as we are told by Professor Tate, 70% of our population is under the age of 35, and that clearly is a constituency that we so much deserve. Thank you very much.
Thank you, wonderful.
Thank you, Chairperson. Most of the facts covered my question. You know, I'm worried really when this Nsolomvu is not getting enough funds. We've been complaining that when you send youth to Nsolomvu, they came back crying that Nsolomvu is not helping us, that we're not getting anything to Nsolomvu. Then if you are not getting funding, I don't know, then we've been complaining that really want to see you having teeth, you know, want to see you at least having, doing something tangible in the youth out there in our community. Really, I will also support that we need to invite the treasurer and to explain to us what exactly is the problem in terms of funding and so on. And also, really, we want to see Nsolomvu in our community. We want, when we send our youth to Nsolomvu, we want them to see them think that no, we have been benefited. But if then we are without funds, then it will be also the something that they don't have funds, they cannot access. So I'll support also that we need to go to invite the treasurer so that they explain exactly what is it that is the problem in terms of this organization.
Honorable Member Mbaleka. Thank you, Chairperson. My question is very straightforward. The Invite a Person with Disability campaign. You gave us the date of April when you started the pilot. Is it going to be an ongoing process throughout the whole year, or do you have specific months targeted during the year? And the open funding and services to people with disabilities, by when will you start with this thing? And how, if you are having all these problems of funding? Thank you.
Just a smaller two suggestions. One, I think when you invite Heather, you must also invite some of the youth back. That would be my concrete proposal, Chair.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether we should work out details here, or should the details be between the office of the CEO and the chairperson of the committee. That we can take care of. My second point, Chairperson, is about, I raised this thing earlier, initially. It's about profiling, you know, of Nsolomvu funds. Because ISTC, the donor, they have not known any single child who's a beneficiary of Nsolomvu in Mangaung or Botshabelo. I therefore conclude that no, they are not giving young people money. I said, Chairperson, last year during the presentation of the strategy, and then strategic plan, one of the proposals I made was that if that is ethically permissible, you really need to develop some kind of a communication strategy, particularly for public representatives. Because the perception is that you are not doing anything. That is a perception, that is a fact. No? Where you are saying, for instance, in the last 3 years, this is what you have done. You've got good statistics. MPs are not interested in the statistics. But if you say in the last year, in terms of enterprise finance, these are the statistics, ne? Got the following youth, you know, this kind of, we've got the following office, I mean, in KwaZulu-Natal, in Urundi, we've got the following number of youth that we have, you know,
if people want to go and see for themselves, our provincial office is this and blah, 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 that kind of a thing, you know, I think it will make an impact. Because I've realized one thing, South Africans, to a large extent, man, we've got a very serious disease. One member yesterday audaciously stood up and said, no, since 1994, in her own community, there has never been a toilet, single toilet that has been built. And, you know, it was strange, and all of us were saying, no, then there's something wrong with the department. And the MEC from that province provided statistics and evidence, Honorable Sir, to say, no. If this member was a part of the ruling party then in KwaZulu-Natal, for that period there was no toilet that was built. But after they took over, this is the numbers that have been built. You understand what I'm saying? So I'm saying really, I really want to recommend that you must be more aggressive, more robust in terms of your communication strategy. And also, you must be assisted. This is what I said to Mr. Gekane, to Mr. Mbalul. To say when Deborah Parker asked you why youths are not having, why do we still not having schools and all those things, don't answer that question because it's not your mandate to build a school. You know, it's not your mandate to build a school, you know. And now, this confusion goes even beyond that. Some government ministers, you know, are raising this thing as well. When you say, why is the department not doing this? They say, no, this thing has got to do with the youth. Go to the youth commission, you know. Yet it is not the mandate of the youth commission. So I'm saying we really need to be a little bit more robust, man, in our communication and advocacy strategy. That is a fundamental weakness that I have realized. And to put across that the level of unemployment in South Africa, Umsobomvu Youth Fund is just but one of the fractions in the broader, you know, template, you know, of government interventions in terms of addressing unemployment, skilling, and all those things. And therefore, you cannot overnight, even in 10 years, you know, resolve that particular question. There are other agencies and all those things. Thanks very much.
Thank you, honorable members. I'm giving over to the Interview Fund to respond. Thank
yeah,
you.
No, Honorable Kutuna, we would like to be very aggressive. And we have been very aggressive in our communication. Hey, but it's hitting our reputation. You know why? Because we advertise, and then here in Cape Town, then we've got 1,500 people the following day. They make applications, then you've got no money to honor it. So, you know, that's the problem, you know, that we can't plan. Okay? Every year it's like a paraffin stove, you know. Like 1 year, you know, you must switch it off before you put in a bit of paraffin, you know. It's not like one nice thing where you can plan, because you can't even hire people. Because I would, you know, okay, you want to open an office here, do the advertising, but then the question is, how do you sustain it? So the problem has been that where we've actually been hit the hardest, where young people have complained, is actually because we have been very visible, but they come and they walk away, and they walk away disappointed because they go to this office, which is a yak point. I mean, we've got 121 offices. We give information there and everything. Then they apply for a loan and so on, but we don't have a loan office. That application must go somewhere 150 kilometers to be processed. Fine, we can do that. But in some of the areas, you find that, in fact, you cannot even begin to have capacity to reach out. Because, you know, advertising and all those things, you know, high-level branding and so on, they are not effective. What is effective is when somebody says, I know I can go to Ehrenreich Street, or I can go to Nelson Mandela Street, number 58. I walk in, and that's what happened where we have opened our advisory centers. In all the towns, because we normally run surveys before we start and after, and we find that our popularity in the community is very low. As soon as because they've seen us on Yizo advertising and so on. But as soon as we open an office, the feedback we get in terms of knowledge and awareness goes up without any advertising, because through word of mouth, young people will tell them, no, if you go to number 48 Church Street, you will be able to find them there. So right now, where we find ourselves is that the result of we had a very aggressive marketing campaign, Radio Metro and so on and so on.
Our communications department has just given us a report back in terms of the service we run. One of the things that Santi runs is also she heads up our customer service, which we do constantly. Because the ISO international standards of operations requires that you have, you know, customer satisfaction service. We're beginning to pick up where people are saying, okay, we saw your advert, we went in, but you didn't have capacity, or we waited for 3 to 4 hours because we didn't have capacity. So I agree with you that we should ramp up our communication, but obviously we'll have to match that with the sufficient capacity. There was a last three questions. I think most of the questions are around the review, the mandate, and the funding. The 5 million rand that we got is actually what was allocated in the budget this year. So there hasn't been any change in that. So that is what we received. So that's what, when we went to the meeting now, and subsequently we asked, because the question we're asking, there was nothing scientific or wow about them. They were just very pedestrian. You know, if one can be modest about it. And so we felt maybe they would find fault in our modeling and so on. So and I made post some questions afterwards, 2 days later, then it appeared as if there was a bit of change of heart. I don't know, maybe after this presentation there will be a change of heart to the negative, who knows. The reliance on philanthropies, that window is not closed. We are pursuing it. In fact, right now it is the only variable that is fully in our control. And of course we appreciate the support that we're getting from this committee. But that is what we are going on. We have actually appointed one of our senior managers to actually head up fundraising and partnership. So that's something that he's doing on a full-time basis now, just so we can intensify the work we do with it. In terms of helping young people where, for example, the issue of land and so on, what we have started is that we have received some money from the DTI, where we started this thing called community enterprise development work. So it's a development work about focusing on community enterprise development. Part of what these young people will do is that we would want them to work in our advisory center to actually engage with the municipalities, just to take away some of the obstacles. Because we do realize that in poor communities, especially in rural areas, your biggest provider of opportunities is government. But in many instances, we find that tribal authority or municipality lacks the capacity to convert those opportunities. So what we will be doing then with these enterprise development workers is to work with municipalities so that if there is a cooperative for washing municipal cars, we can then work with the municipality in developing that particular project. Right now, we stopped short of only identifying the opportunity, but we realize that there's no capacity for follow through. So that's one thing that we plan to do this year. The last question, Madam Chair, is the capacity that we have built. We have quite a strong capacity. In the world, there isn't any fund that actually will compare with the fund in terms of volumes and the capacity that we have. There isn't any fund in the world. Okay, whether it's China or India or the United States of America or anywhere else, okay, and we have worked very closely with people who have done so much around the world that we know that the fund is the leading youth development institution around the world simply because of the capacity that was built. So we have really built a very serious capacity even by international standards. It is, if not the best, it is the leading youth development institution around the world. And these are things that are said by our peers, people who work in the same field everywhere around the world. And we do have, relationships with some of these organizations. So thank you, Madam Chair. And in terms of the ongoing, yes, the take a person with disability, what we are going to do now is that we'll create a database that will source information from other databases of people with disabilities and begin to run an ongoing awareness around that database that people, if you want to employ a person with disability, that's where you can find them. But some database already exists, so that we will continue to do. We are also running focus groups with people who participated to find out what are their experiences, what are the hazards, things like transportation, information, also to find out from employers. What we will then release is a booklet in terms of best practices that we can give to employers to say, this is how we should go about employing a person with disability. This is where you will find them, and this is the support you will require in terms of facilities and so forth. So that's something that we will publish during the year. But every year in April, we'll run a massive campaign just to create that awareness. But it will have a service that is ongoing for throughout the year.
Sorry, the last one you just mentioned, is that within the 5 million that you would be questioning that when you're having money?
Chairperson, these are some of the things that when we go to corporates, what we realize is that corporates tend to like supporting specific ideas. And so what we will do then, with the support of this committee, I'm sure we'll get a lot of corporates that will, you know, for example, come forward to say they like for example, the mentorship program, the volunteer mentorship program, was supported by Accenture. We raised money through Prince Charles Trust in the UK. We got about 600,000 rand to start the volunteer mentorship program. And that's funding that they continue to force for us in the UK to support that program. So we'll follow a similar example of where we'll go to an operation, a funder, a donor, a philanthropist, and ask them to give specific projects, specific locations. And we would really like to welcome you to presentations when we do roadshows to companies to raise that kind of money. But I'm sure with your support, we should be able to get away with something.
Chair, can I please follow up with one question? Honourable members, I want to now one more follow-up round of questions. I see honourable members
several hands up. We are satisfied, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, honourable member. Chairman, just the practice by way of proposal. The funds did indicate that when they started operating some 6 years ago, so there wasn't any legislation. But look, we have an instructor that I think you should think about. If you are saying that you have the kind of reputation and coming from the peers both domestically and internationally, why don't you think of doing work a bit on a small scale, and that could be after a bit as time goes on, just as the Human Partners Research Council is doing for quite a number of governments on the continent and elsewhere, relying obviously on this kind of experience that you have, because then you would be able to source revenue elsewhere, and this might be a matter of, you know, legislation being introduced so that it allows you to operate pretty much like the Human Rights Council, so that you don't just rely on philanthropists or, you know, grants from Parliament, that sort of thing. Something that I think you should think about. Honourable Andrew, you will be the last.
Yes, thank you. I actually have a list of questions that I wanted to pose, but because of the issues of funding, I decided not to concentrate on that. But just lastly, what Kikane has indicated with regard to the Taking a Disabled Person to Work campaign and the manual that they intend to write, I think it's important that they must liaise with OSGP and especially the disability movement led by the Disabled People of South Africa. This is very important thing.
Yes, Chair. In fact, this campaign, we got very wonderful support from the OSGP. We really did, in terms of sourcing names of people and so on, and also the training. Remember, we ran an 8-day workshop before we paid people disabilities. Some of them had not worked for a very long time, or in fact never worked before. So we had to run job preparation, workshops, and we did really get So that we will continue to do. And then also in terms of the suggestion from Honorable Cyril, you are quite correct. In fact, we have been invited by by the government of Qatar, to work with and support them in setting up a fund in the Middle East in 24 countries for youth development. We are already, Mulini just returned from a trip in Indonesia where we're working with the World Bank for establishment of a $50 million to $300 million fund for youth development, and he's leading that particular intervention. In Zambia as well, we've been invited to provide support. So there's quite a number of governments that have already approached us. And for example, I mean, with the oil countries and the coast resource, and they want to set up huge program for youth development, and they've asked us to work with them in the design and development. In fact, over the next 2 weeks, and I will be there in a workshop with the royal family to assist. So that's one of the things that.
So royal family. You are really.
Jefferson, they are really becoming royalty. Even in the policy, even in our meeting, you give them if France is in a pambini. Lastly, Jefferson, they must please make contact with the people in Peru. Those people need assistance in helping people with disability and all of that. Please, they mustn't forget Peru.
We don't want to go to Peru.
Thank you, Mr. Kitana, and to your team, and to the fund. I'm not too sure about what Honorable Gambari said about the coffin, but I think you started off very sad with your presentation, but I think it's ended on a high note. With that, I'd like to say I'm not going to repeat the last proposal that was made, and I hope you made note of that. And I think, as there was a proposal with the JMC, needs to maybe intervene with having a meeting with the Minister of Labour as well as Treasury as well, and to, and sit down with you as well, and maybe, have that meeting. So JMC also wants that support from you, so that we can obviously have and pick up something with copy information on hand. There were like lots of questions that we would have loved to have asked you, but to focus mainly on the budget because of the concerns that you had. But I think we'll meet again in the future and we can maybe ask those questions one again. Yes, thank you very much for your briefing. Honourable members, there's just a few announcements we'd like to make before you depart, please. So the briefing from the Ocean Fund is completed and they could be released. I will ask the committee clerk if we could meet next Friday again, but we will first see if we do have a meeting next Friday.
Thank you.
So we will look at our program for next week. But I just want to let you know, please keep in mind, members, June the 11th, please. It's very important. We have an event of Children's Day that day, please. Children's Day falls on a weekend, so we are going to be celebrating it here in Parliament, and our committee is leaving that project. It will be on the 11th of June, please, members.
Okay.
Nalitwa, you will please contact all members with information and that detail, please. That members from the JMC, please participate and please be present in that event. It also is on that day as well for months, so the kids will come the morning. We have 110 children coming to Parliament on that day participating. 100 children from South Africa and then 10 children from the African embassies that will be coming that day. We planned with the ORC the whole event and it should have been kept up to date via email on regarding all the events. That's the Children's Day, is the 11th of June. Then the researcher from Parliament is basically called regarding you specifically to the youth. I think she has some information, or she has information regarding Youth Day, or rather Youth Parliament that they are planning towards the end of June. I think she please just tell us what just briefly what when it is taking place and what is
the thing. Thanks, Honorable on the 26th to the 27th of July. Of June, sorry. Yes. For the Youth Parliament, I think the first presentation, there were meetings actually that took place around this within the office of the Speaker and with the Deputy Speaker. I'm then told that there is an office from the Deputy Speaker that directly deals with issues around the processes, as in terms of if there are meetings that are going to take place, when are those meetings going to take place and when. Ours as the research unit is to give the support around the papers that will speak in on themes that are developed for the Youth Parliament. There are four themes that have been identified. Papers will be on theme one, the review on Youth Parliament, that will speak on the recommendations that have been forwarded or identified then or proposed, and to see whether are there any impact or is there any impact that has been done through those recommendations in previous years, and what is it then that will be then presented through the paper that will be developed. And that will sit also under the information that has been referred through the public hearing that was organized 2005 by portfolio committee. That says that besides the fact that the youth is just the youth is unemployed, it doesn't end there. It goes beyond the fact that they are underemployed and they're participating for employment. Mm-hmm. And they are caught in perpetual casual employment with limited prospects for securing permanent employment or advancing their personal or professional development. This also speaks on the issues of the... it will touch also on the APEC priorities then from the State of the Nation address, and the first and the second economy. The second theme will speak on the skills development. That is then also on the review of the National Skills Development Strategy, as it was proposed to speak also within the 2008 APEC priorities, which also includes the role and the etiquette of the speakers and the FET colleges, whether are they really doing the actual work that is expected from them as they are being funded by the state. That also includes all these things that are also accommodating the youth with disabilities in terms of the access to education and also getting the training around skills development. The third one is on the eradicating youth unemployment through entrepreneurship and growth of SMMEs. Well, Chairperson, as it was said, Honourable Chair, that the Mthabong Youth Fund is one of the fractions in the broad scale in terms of assisting to deal and address the issues of unemployment, heritage of unemployment, and also poverty. However, then this will be looking on their roles and their responsibilities and the kind of the services that they provide as to eradicate unemployment and poverty within the country. This will also touch on the issue that was raised earlier on with regard to...
We are lost. What's happening now?
The Shishitin Formula, remember we have Youth Parliament on the 26th and the 27th of June. The Shishitin Formula is one of the themes. I know our committee is not involved with the preparations of that, but at the end of the day, they will probably maybe ask us to be part of it. And I think we must know what is happening because I know it's been organized by our Speaker's office. I know that they are continuing with that process. So that is just for to give us feedback as to what is happening regarding the Youth Parliament.
I really want to propose that Chairperson will write me a letter to the Speaker and have some few comrades to meet the Speaker.
cannot afford to cooperate like this. In the NC caucus, we defended the administration. Nobody could do that. Because of some decisions, say, taking in some little corner, we don't know that. And we are involved in the last minute. We struggled since last year until now. I know that 3 weeks back I had a meeting with Mr. Lamani, there's a man called Tango Lamani. Where are the minutes of the youth parliament? I don't know, I'm sure you're aware, maybe you must also sensitize this figure. The organizations that are saying they're going to boycott this youth parliament because it's a talk show. So it becomes a matter of utmost urgency, chairperson, that we need a figure. We don't demand to take over the process. But really, we really need to advise. We really need to advise, man, and sensitize on certain things. Because I believe we're jumping the sheet. The preparations are in advance, but there are many unresolved, outstanding issues. One of the things that the youth said last year was that they need a report on what has been done about their thing. We have since demanded the report, I don't know for how long, to say because we have to follow up this in the department, what is the resolution? We don't have that report, you know. I mean, we do research, we are not, but we really feel that whatever we may get from you, but we may need to meet with the speaker, whoever, the power that is there. Thank you.
Honorable Caroline?
Thank you, Chairperson. I also wanted to say what Mrs. Stoner said. Because people are still asking, youth of last year, they are still asking the report of their resolution that they have taken last year. And also we need things in writing, man. Even if that information, the researcher can give what she was telling us now in writing, it can be much better. We need the meeting, we need the report in writing, we need also the information in writing. We cannot keep everything just like that. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. I will take that in touch. Hope is what you want to say. Just to feed back to honorable members, as indicated with Rava, I have come on as the researcher looking at youth issues dedicated to the committee. So in terms of our involvement, particularly around youth part of it, Mrs. Stoner, I agree with you 100%. When we, within the research unit, we request to come on to provide content papers, my first question to the public education officer was, where is the JNC involved? How are they involved? Who is the task team? Where are the reports? Because the request from the National Youth Commission at the beginning of the year was, please get us access to the Youth Parliamentary Report. In the first meeting with Madam Speaker, it was also raised, from my understanding, the Public Education Office had completed a report that had to be signed off at the high level. And I think that's where it needs to become unstuck. But I would agree wholeheartedly that if a delegation from the JNC could meet with speakers, it's important because, again, from the research side, when we sit in the meetings, we're there to give content support. It's very difficult for us to engage issues around process. And then also, I mean, linked to that is the follow-up with the National Youth Commission, with requests again to the reports related to Youth Parliament.
Thank you, Chair Palmer. I wanted to present this to the JNC, and the JNC told me as chair and what to do, and I tried every year to see where the JNC can fit into this parliament, and it has yet been done. So and I want earlier I wanted to tell the JNC it's still happening, that the youth parliament is happening without the JNC's involvement, and let us go and speak to the speaker's office to see, because we are into youth issues, and we need to make sure that we are fitted into that process. We, as the JNC, do not get any feedback from those youth parliament to make sure we can take matters forward. Thank you for that, Honourable Fortuna. Thank you for that recommendation. We will take that recommendation forward. And I'm sorry for the interruption. I hope that you understand where the members are coming from. And then through the madam,
to the Madam Speaker's office. We will get, we'll meet with them, get the report, get the minutes, and to understand what process was followed, get understanding, and to see where the change can fit in. Thank you, then, for being here. And then we will take it in from there. Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Members, for your involvement. Thank you for your participation. The meeting is now officially closed. Sorry. We will be having a meeting on Wednesday, just to adopt the minutes of our previous meeting. Thank you so much.